welcome to the Behind the Dream podcast with myself, Dr. Kirsten van Heerden. We'll be sharing stories that tell you more about what really goes on in the hearts and minds of professional athletes, as well as offering a glimpse behind the scenes of the professional sports world. So welcome everybody to this episode of Behind the Dream. I'm really looking forward to chatting with US swimmer Caroline Burkle today. Caroline grew up in Louisville in Kentucky and then moved to Gainesville in Florida to go to university. And while she was there, she had a stellar swimming career where in 2008, she was actually voted the NCAA Outstanding Female Swimmer of the Year. In the NCAA Championships, she won both the 200 and the 500 yard freestyle. And 2008 was also a really fantastic year for Caroline. She was part of the US team that won a bronze medal in Beijing in the 4x200 freestyle relay. After that, Caroline retired from international competition in 2010, and she went on to found Rise Athletes with her fellow Olympic swimmer, Rebecca Soni. This is a mentorship program for young athletes. She is also an artist and a swimwear designer and much more. So welcome, Caroline. Thank you so much for talking to me today.
Oh, thank you. I'm excited. It's cool to talk to someone on the other side of the globe.
It is. Very cool. So I have to start. I was reading up that your nickname, or one of your nicknames, is Mouth. And I was like, where on earth did you get that nickname from?
Oh my gosh. So when I was basically maybe the age of 8 until 16, I was nicknamed Mouth. My club coach in Louisville, Kentucky, used to always, I had the biggest smile. Like, my smile when I was little, of course, when you're younger, your face is smaller, and my smile just, you know, devoured my entire face. So he used to call me Mouth, and, you know, I remember being like, I don't get it. And then, you know, he said, well, your mouth is so big and you're so happy. Like, you laugh so big and you smile so big. And my club coach was a big jokester. He was a wonderful, wonderful man. And he loved joking. Like, he loved jokes and just cracked a bunch of, like, you know, super not funny, but funny jokes, you know, all day. So we really loved him, and that's how I got that nickname.
I think that's a great nickname. So
yeah, it was.
You know, I know I'm biased because I'm a swimmer as well, but I know it's a tough sport with all the training and that. I wanted to start off by asking you, you know, where did your love of the water and swimming come from?
I grew up in a really cool environment in Louisville where we had a lake, a rock quarry, swam in as kids. My club team Lakeside was a beautiful place, and my dad had grown up swimming there and swam there all through high school and everything. And it's just this gigantic mecca, a huge rocked out quarry. And so, as you know, babies, we would go there with parents and, you know, do diaper dip and all of these things to learn how to swim. And I had an affinity for the water right away. I think I was a little timid, but I had a natural love. Like, I didn't want to get out once I was in. And that was the first sign there. I think it's just in my blood. I'm a Cancer, so I'm a water sign anyway. And so, I mean, that's sort of how I remember it. I know that, you know, there wasn't as much documentation back then and everything, but they have so many pictures of me as a kid just in the water for hours and hours.
Oh, that's lovely. And then, and what made you then decide as well to become a competitive swimmer? Because you say loving the water and styling that. What made you decide to compete?
Well, I was 8 when I started to actually compete. And I remember being very scared of competition. Like, right. I loved to swim. Yeah. And I loved to be in the water, you know, just playing. But then the moment that I would have to compete, I started to have these anxious experiences, you know, like, I don't want to be, it wasn't like anxiety. It was like, I don't want to compete because it's just too much work. It feels just like it's way too much work. Like, I don't want to do, you know, like, I don't know how to do this. So that being said, I competed at 10, and I think I just became really good. So I kept going, and I really did love deep down, you know, throughout this podcast, I'll probably talk a lot about how I'm very different than a lot of conventional athletes. Like, I don't have the same, I'm going to kick your ass, you know, attitude. Like, it's a, it's in there, but it's not external. And I don't think that it has to be external, of course, but there wasn't this little girl that just wanted to kick butt, right? Mm. There was this little girl that wanted to have fun and then wanted to succeed based on, you know, my inner drive that was in there, probably genetically, to be honest. That was the start of it. But I did waver. I went up and down and all around with how I wanted to compete when I was really, really young. I didn't love to train. We'll get into that. I didn't love training. You know, I love to race, but I didn't love training. Even though it was scary to race, there was something super thrilling and exciting about that.
So just going what you said, I think it's so important that people need to know you can be different. You're right. Sometimes we have this idea that you have to have this, you know, killer instinct, and you say it must be this, like, you know, win at all costs in a sense. And actually, you don't necessarily have to be like that to be successful.
Not at all. And I really have had a hard time accepting that. Mm. And I think it's just been up until this past year or two that I've realized how different I am and how different I was. It rocked me a lot, you know, because I didn't feel like everyone else. I didn't feel like I had this nasty bone in my body or something. And not saying that everyone does, but that was my view of it. You know, like I felt like my perception of it was that I needed to be this bitch, for lack of a better term, you know. And that was the biggest piece of advice given to me in college was, come on, Berkel, you got to be a little more of a bitch when you're behind the box, you know, you can't just be laughing and having fun. And so I didn't feel understood, you know, so I didn't feel that I was understood for the way that I wanted to do things or the way that worked well for me, because it wasn't conventional. It wasn't the way that everybody else would have been told to compete. I confused a lot of coaches this way. Yeah.
I can imagine. I just think, do you think sometimes coaches do have a bit of a one size fits all approach and, you know, this is how you should do it, and don't actually take into account, you know, the individual variations in personality?
Yeah. I think there's a fear. And I think it's changing. I'm going to caveat by saying it's changing. I think it's changing. But, you know, back in the 90s and then early 2000s, it's a different approach, right? Like the progressiveness of swimming and of mindset, you know, training isn't as far along. That doesn't mean that there weren't coaches that were far along at all. I mean, you see, if you watch the Michael Jordan documentary, you know, you see... Yeah. The coach just completely, you know, in Chinese medicine and doing yoga. Right. And so it's interesting, right? Like you get these outliers, but that's not to say that the coaches aren't interested in that. It's just a conditioning response. Mm. Like they would have to be into work into a different conditioning response in order to understand that there are different ways and avenues. One of the things that I always felt very confused about was, is my way enough? Like, will my way be successful? Yeah. And my way was that I didn't know times or splits. I didn't have this, I've got to win. Like I'm just going to focus on that. And I just can't think about anything else. And, you know, I'm just going to just be angry and, you know, not talk to anybody at the meets. And, you know, like I felt like I was supposed to be that way. So anyways, back to the coach's comment, I think that it's changing, but there wasn't once I graduated from high school, my coach in high school was fantastic. Once I graduated from high school, I felt like I was lumped into this category for a couple of years of needing to be the way that he thought I should be. Mm-hmm. And it didn't work for me. It worked for me freshman year because I was just new and green and it didn't matter. You know, there was nothing would have mattered. Like my body responded to the new environment well.
Yeah.
But then once it started to unpack, it was like, okay, I'm trying to fit a square into a round hole here.
So how did you manage that? Because, you know, you have a couple of years at college. You know, how did you, said it was a bit confusing. How did you manage that and be as successful as you were?
Yeah. My sophomore year was rough. You know, my freshman year was fun. It was great. I did really well. And then I got into my sophomore year and all of these expectations were on my shoulders. And these expectations, I'm coming to find out, were, you know, that I needed to be what was expected of me mentally, physically, emotionally. And I was just very different, right? Yeah. So let's compare it to, again, like you and I have talked about artists.
Yes, or,
children that have a special gift that they're, you know, crammed into a math and science culture, and really they're a spiritual leader and, you know, design and art and, you know, more of an abstract way of thinking. That's how I felt, you know? So I'm in this situation where I'm like, I'm just not like everybody else. And I couldn't put my finger on it. And I was listening to this podcast the other day with Alanis Morissette and Dax Shepard, the armchair podcast. And she talked about this, you know, she was raised in a very Catholic world and she felt that she always had to be this exact perfection that was expected of her in that world. And I listened to that and I just tears were streaming down my face because, you know, I always hesitate saying this because it wasn't like there was any intention of this at all. Yeah. This was just the culture that I was a part of. And I felt so outside, like I was an outsider my entire childhood. And no matter how much I smiled and laughed and fit in, I never felt right. And so as I got into college and this feeling came back again, it tends to take over my entire being. Like I shut down because I'm not, it's like a creative being trapped in a cage and you're not expressing yourself. It's basically like withering away, you know, because you're in this role where you have to be this absolute cookie cutter version of yourself. So, you know, sophomore year was tough. I didn't do well at all. I didn't know how to even have this conversation. Not once with my coaches, really? With anyone. Yeah. I tucked myself away into a hole. And junior year, I started to do better because I started to have these conversations with my coach. So I went to one of the assistant coaches first. Well, I went to my club coach first, and then my club coach called one of the assistant coaches because they were really good friends. And that's basically why I chose to go to Florida, because I knew one of the assistant coaches really well.
Okay.
Yeah. So he just said, you know, Caroline's different. Like she doesn't need the same things that the other athletes need, which is hard because you have 70 athletes on a team. You can't cater to every single person. But if this girl is scoring points at NCAAs and SECs and is a key player, you might want to learn her style. And so I had some conversations with my coaches, and it was very centered around what works for me and the way that my brain does well with how I train. And things started to shift from times and splits and stats to tempo and feel, imagery and visualization. And my entire life changed right then. Like it was the next like 2-3 years were lights out. So the biggest change was communication and being able to share perspectives and to be honest, you know, find out where I'm wrong and they find out where they're wrong and be able to come to a center place where we're like, okay, let's try this way. You know, that way wasn't working last year. What worked for you freshman year? Oh, no expectations. We didn't have any times in mind. You know, you didn't have anything that we were just ready to go. Let's do it. Right. There was nothing that you had to place on you that was not you. So yeah, just those conversations.
It's really, I love what you say. Like you focus more on, they say, on the rhythm and the feeling. And I mean, swimming is such a time-based sport. You say it splits in time and you know, it's really cool to hear you say that actually for yourself, it was far more about the rhythm and the feeling. And I often say to athletes that I work with, all sports are about rhythm and finding that rhythm. And to hear you say it like that, and the times will come from it. I love that idea of focusing on the rhythm of something and then that outcome will take care of itself.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. And one of my friends, Carl Pally, he has a saying that is true performance is measured by feel. And I remember, when I first met him a couple of years back and I read that, I was like, we are going to be friends. Like, no matter what, this is really great because I couldn't find that anywhere. You know, like I was struggling to find that. Like I would listen to podcast after podcast, and this is no knock on anybody at all.
Yeah.
You know, I I work well with people that are opposite of me. So this is no knock at all, but yeah. I couldn't relate. Like I was like, why is no one talking about the feeling? Why is no one talking about emotion, visualization, imagery more in terms of feel rather than outcome? And I couldn't figure it out. Like it just felt very like, well, I just put my head down and, you know, and then I really focused on my third 50. And then I really just, you know, I really tried to understand, like I trained better. I just slept better. I got like 8 hours, you know, it was very like methodical. And there's nothing wrong with, like I said, there is nothing wrong with that. Yeah. I just couldn't personally relate. And so I was like, I need some help understanding myself because I feel weird and like an outsider, you know? And so once I realized that it could be measured by feel and that there's feeling and rhythm in sport, and especially in a sport that is as fluid as swimming, no pun intended, you know, it started to all connect for me then. I was like, okay, all right, that makes sense. You know, I think that's exactly what I was experiencing. Yeah.
And then you went on, as you say, to have a couple of really successful years. And, you know, you were saying earlier that you weren't necessarily one of those little girls that, hey, I want to win. Were you ever one of those little girls that were like, hey, I want to go to the Olympic Games? Or did that just happen?
Yeah.
Not by chance, but just, you know, it was an extension of swimming well.
Yeah, no, whole life, but I didn't blast it or share it or do anything of that nature. I just had the quiet goal.
Yeah.
And you know, there's different mindsets surrounding sharing goals. And I firmly believe in both. I believe in sharing your goals with people and putting them out there in the world and the universe. And then I also believe in allowing it to be yours and to be something that you really want to do and to do the work quietly. And so with that phase of my life, I was doing the work quietly. Like I knew I wanted to make the Olympics. It was a goal I spoke with my coaches about. It was a goal I knew I could do, but I possessed this silent confidence about me. And I think that for a long time, I knew for a fact I was going to. I just didn't know if my way was going to be the right way.
Yeah, yeah.
And I had that thought in my head, again, going back to that, like, is this the way you do it? Like, am I weird? Am I different? So that was, as a young girl, that was what I, you know, battled with the most.
You know, and there are a couple of things I want to ask you on that. But the first one, when you won the bronze medal and you're standing on the podium after all of these struggles and you say confusion and figuring yourself out, what did it finally feel like to actually stand on the podium at the Olympic Games on the biggest stage?
It felt really special. I remember having a lot of different emotions with it just because it's so intense that you are so excited. But, you know, we also wanted to do better. Our relay got third and we were like, oh, we should have won, you know, but then you're still so happy to be standing on the podium, you know? So there really is no perfect way to describe what that feels like. It's just a surreal feeling that's so incredibly difficult to explain.
Yeah.
And it's also strange because you're in the middle of a different country and, you know, prelims in Beijing were at night and finals were in the morning. So that was even weirder. You know, we're on the podium at like 9 a.m., you know, and so it's just it's definitely a surreal experience. That can really only be felt.
Yeah, you're right. Not put into words. And I suppose ultimately, would you say all the struggles that you had to go through and figuring things out, it was worth it for that moment? It was worth it?
Oh, absolutely. Yeah. 100%. I wouldn't have changed a thing. You know, the struggles are what make the light. And until you understand the dark, then the light is hard to feel. And that's a misconception too. I think that, you know, it's like athletes struggle and that's totally part of how the glory is so beautiful. But absolutely worth it.
Just going back a little bit, you know, you said you almost like saying to the coaches, you know, I need help figuring myself out. Do you feel, because it's something that I feel, you know, swimming and sport can certainly help you figure yourself out if you have the right people around you. Do you feel that your swimming years, were they something that did help you figure yourself out, or was it more of a struggle?
Yeah, I don't think you ever really figure yourself out. I think the whole goal is to stay curious with yourself and not become too complacent. And I think that was my gift and that was my advantage, was that I was so incredibly curious with myself throughout my career and trying to understand what is it that I'm feeling and experiencing and how can I be more in tune with myself and true to myself as an athlete and not, you know, forcing myself to fit into this persona that everybody wants me to be. So I think that my curiosity kept me going, and it could be a curse at times because you can overthink, but I think staying curious, regardless of what it is in life, your career, relationships, yourself, your growth, is the key. Otherwise,
absolutely,
you're, you know, falling into a complacent place.
So if we move on from, you know, your swimming career, can you tell us a little bit about what led up to your retirement? Because you stopped swimming at the end of 2010. So what led you to that decision?
This is where the irony starts to set in, is I knew I was more, and I knew that I had more inside of me. And I couldn't pinpoint what that was, and I couldn't pinpoint how to do it.
Yeah,
I had no idea, but I didn't want to be attached to the swimmer identity my whole life. I wanted to be able to explore. I'm very, very curious. I wanted to be able to explore other roads of life. And I knew I was going to struggle, but I wanted to. Like, I couldn't, I was tired, you know, like we crushed ourselves day in and day out in college, 8 hours a day, you know, and through of my upbringing, training as well, it was super tough. And so I was just ready. I couldn't have justified in my mind continuing to go on and not explore other sides of me. It's hard. Well, I mean, you're breaking up with something, right? That you've been attached to for so long. And it's been a relationship in your life that you're so in love with. And then there it goes, you know, automatically finished. And then you're like, well, wait a minute. I didn't want this identity. Or I didn't want to attach myself and cling to this identity and become enmeshed in it, because I have been forever and I didn't want any more. But now I don't know what I am. So I guess that was my identity, right? And so it's this whole catch 22 of, okay, well, I know I'm more, but I don't know who I am.
Yeah. Well, as we've spoken about before, one of my real areas of interest is identity, because exactly that, you know, as much as you think, well, I know that I'm more than a swimmer, it's so difficult while you are, training 8 hours a day and you're hanging out with swimming friends and going to swim meets, do not, in a sense, have that as your whole identity, you know. And then absolutely, when you stop and it's taken away, even if you're curious and want to stop, it is incredibly difficult. Is it this question, who am I? And it's a lot more difficult to answer than people might think.
Absolutely. And it makes me always wonder. So if, you know, I question, like, if I would have stayed in, could I have still cultivated another identity and also swam? And the answer is yes, for sure, probably. But I think that's the choice that's made that time for a lot of professional athletes is, do I want to be figuring out, you know, what to do while also doing this thing that's captured my identity? Or do I want to dive into something new and not know what I'm doing and not be, you know, and just totally into this sport anymore? And so, you know, then it begs the question of, when do you develop your identity and how can you develop it so that you're not just an athlete?
And I was going to ask, you know, so much of when that's your identity is that you say attach yourself to that, but then your self-worth comes from that identity. Did you feel at all that maybe your self-worth was attached to the swimming identity, and that's something that you had to try and figure out, not just even figuring out who else am I, but what else am I good at, and feeling that sense of worth?
Yeah. I mean, I have for sure struggled a lot. I think my struggles were also attached and tied to some trauma. And so not knowing how to navigate through that space at all was really hard for me. I left the sport and it felt like I was leaving the best thing and also the hardest thing in the entire world. And so my struggles with it were, they developed over time. the beginning of it all, I ran away. You know, I was numb and ran away and just preoccupied myself and kept busy to avoid sitting still with whatever it was that I was experiencing. Because also if I sat still, that means I wasn't achieving anything anymore. And that was a great thing in some ways because I joined new communities and, you know, made new friends. So of course it's wonderful, but I was still avoiding myself. So it took about 5 to 6 years of just running and confusion and pain and feeling lost and avoidant, totally avoidant, to then all of the sudden my body kept score and showed me. And then I realized what I was running from. And that happened in like 2017-ish. So that's a whole another chapter of my life that, you know, it's like you go through this, I went through this numb phase, and this is just personal to me, you know, in that space, but I went through this numb phase where I didn't know at all who I was. And I didn't even know how to go there. I just sort of existed and had fun and did whatever and moved. And I was in therapy for a while and battling some like eating issues that was keeping me too thin. And, you know, and then my body told me stop. It showed me with, two broken heels back to back, hospital visit for a septic knee infection, a concussion, cracked skull, you know, all these things happened within a span of 2.5 years. It was like, boom, 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 boom. And finally it was like, I think I get what's happening. And the irony of this time is that right when that was happening, I was recognizing that I had been running from the things that I wanted to create in my career, which were a mind-body connection, which were understanding my heart better, which were my creativity, which were speaking my truth and my voice, and which were, you know, not getting pushed aside in different relationships, which were healing from trauma, emotional, and, you know, it was just a slew of all these things. It was like, whoa, like, I don't even know where to start, but it all started to make sense.
So you say the very thing that you needed was the thing that you were running away from, in a sense.
Yeah, the very thing I needed.
There again, a few things to ask you there, but just to go back, you said, you know, if you sat still, you felt like you weren't achieving anything. I find often with athletes, you know, very goal orientated and like to achieve, are generally high achievers. You know, was that something that you really struggled with after retiring, the sense of, am I actually achieving anything?
Oh, absolutely. I 100% found my worth through what I was seen to do. And so I started to just join all these things and like do these Ragnar relays and running races and marathons and all these things I thought would make me happy. And they weren't. Like nothing was really doing it. It was for sure a high for a day or two. And then you're like, okay, now what? You know, like now what am I supposed to do? I just did this thing and it's like, nothing will ever feel the same as the Olympics, you know, and nothing will ever feel like that. But I did, I chased. And some of it was wonderful because it taught me a lot about myself and it really was a lot of fun. You know, a lot of the races were a blast and Ragnar relays were a blast and, you know, being a part of groups and having so much fun in that way, it was a blast. And then it hit me what I was doing, you know, like this isn't like, I'm not doing this for the right reasons.
Here. Yeah.
Like, what am I doing this to prove myself to who? Like, who do I want to love me more?
Great question. Yeah.
Is it me? Is it my own love? Is it love from people in my past that I never got? Is it to be understood? And what I've realized this past year is that I've spent my whole life wanting to be understood. And I know that we all technically do, like that's a human trait, you know, but I really felt different and so different that I realized I've never been able to be me. I've never been able to be different enough or weird enough or, you know, abstract and artsy enough. I had to be this athlete and this performer and this achiever. And I didn't even do it the way that everybody wanted me to do it anyway. So I don't know how. Yeah. So it was just this feeling of complete anger. And that really hit me. That hit me hard. There's a lot of grief that goes on in transition, and all of the emotions that come up for you are interchanging all the time.
You're absolutely right. It is a grieving process, and it's this mix of emotions, and sometimes everything in one day, say anger, depression, like denial, all of these things just going on at the same time. And it's almost like you have to be the athlete or the artist. There's kind of no room for both.
Mm-hmm.
And yeah, you said it's actually quite sad. Why can't you be both?
There really is no room. And then I ask myself, who's telling me that?
Yeah.
Who's telling me there's no room? Is it me? Is it society? Or what is the belief that's telling me I can't be both things?
Mm.
And I think there's something that I believe personally, and maybe people can resonate with this, but I always like to share, you know, my experience versus telling people what it is that the truth is, right? Because everyone has a different way of perceiving it. And so hopefully it can be relatable in some way. But I thought that if I was spreading my time and passions between more than just one thing, that meant I didn't care about that one thing. So something always took precedence over something else. And if I cared about art or creativity as much as I cared about swimming, then that means I didn't care about swimming. That means that I didn't care. And that means that I was not focused.
Yeah.
And then if I wasn't focused, that means that I wasn't approved of. And then if I wasn't approved of, that means I wasn't loved.
So in order to be loved, you have to deny at least one, if not more, aspects of yourself in a sense.
Right. Because that means that you're fully committed, you're fully valued, you're fully validated, you're fully into something, and you'll make someone proud. And as I unpack, that just goes way back, right? For me, it's way back. And and so it's a very interesting phenomenon to think about all the steps on that ladder that you have to go through in your mind to realize the root of it. And is that a story, or is that create, you know, is that made up? Mm-hmm. Yeah, likely. That's something we create in our heads.
Yeah, but it's very real.
And oh, was it my truth?
Yeah.
Oh, sure. It was my truth. I thought for sure that was the case.
So, Caroline, you said in 2017, sort of things almost came to a head. And I know, you know, recently, I think this year, you've had some things on Instagram around your struggles with mental health. So what made you decide to speak out and actually share some of your struggles?
I think I started to realize that the only way that I was going to fulfill a value of mine, which is connection and truth, would be to share what I'm experiencing. And in doses, you know, bit by bit, whatever feels ready and right for me. But I want to help other people. And I think that I want to do two different things. I want to encourage other athletes, either still competing or transitioning, that they don't have to have anything prepared for a transition. They don't have to be in this perfect place, you know, knowing who they are outside of sport in order to transition. Like, there's no checklist that makes it okay, that their experience is valid, whatever that is, once it happens. You can't really prevent it. You know, you can't really prepare for it in a perfect way. All you can do is learn your support system and how to navigate through something that is yours. The other thing is that I want people to be able to relate to my story and take what they want from it. So not something I struggle with personally is just like, here are five ways to do this. And here's the dictionary definition of this. And here's how you do this, right? That's great. But I don't know. You can be different and not know. And you don't need to have, nothing is a one answer type of thing. It's not cookie cutter. So it is for people and humans to relate to someone sharing their story, or to take what they want from it. Whether that is something that resonates or something that totally makes someone angry and triggers them into thinking about something about themselves that may be showing up there, and not backing away from that. So those two things have been a goal for me because I firmly believe in sharing and connecting in order to figure things out for yourself. And I wish I would have known and listened to more stories myself when I was in transition so that I could have listened to others and then understood that that's their experience, but how does it resonate with mine? Or what can I pull from that and then think about? So that's been, those have been really helpful for me in order to frame what it is that my goal with sharing my experiences is. And for me personally, I'm an external processor, so it helps me to speak it and to share it.
I mean, one of the reasons I started this podcast was because I think that we learn best through stories, sharing stories and sharing experiences. And having, you know, spoken out and said, hey, this is something I've been struggling with, what have you found the reaction? You know, how have people reacted to that?
Overwhelmingly supportive. I think there's still some confusion. Not in a bad way, but people always want to know more.
Yeah.
You know, well, what made you fall into this? Or, you know, how did you navigate that? Or what did you do? Or what did you feel? Or what did you think? Or, you know, they want to know more. And unfortunately, there's a lot of what I'm working through that I'm still not ready to talk about. And it's a lot more personal, you know, things that were traumatic for me. But they did have an impact on it. But I think the main thing to remember and what I always try to talk about is that, you know, hard things, difficult things, trauma, you know, whatever you want to call it, takes time to understand. But it's also something that at the end of the day still stems back to a nervous system response that we can all understand is healed through releasing, working through something, and owning it and not running from it. So my ability to own it and to speak it and to share it in my eyes is an empowering way for me to continue to step into the uncomfortable parts of it instead of running away from it.
Yeah, and it speaks a little bit to my next question. And I know we've actually spoken about this before, this idea of preparation versus prevention. So explain a little bit, because that was kind of your phrase, which I love. So explain a little bit what you mean by that.
Yeah. So, you know, when I was just speaking about the two things that I hope I can share with the world or my reasons for sharing, one of them was, well, I mean, they both kind of intersect, but one of them was that you can't really prepare yourself for a transition, that whatever it is that you're experiencing is okay, that you can prepare for anything, you know, like if preparation is key, you can prepare for a transition by accepting the fact that it will be different, that it will be hard, that you will be uncomfortable, that you do have specific tools such as meditation and therapy and conversation and, you know, trauma healing, somatic experiencing. Like you can look into tools that can help you as you prepare, but you can't prevent it.
Yeah.
So preparation over prevention, because you can't prevent somebody from going through an experience. You can't say, I'm just going to stop this whole transition pain for you right now by taking this magic pill, right?
Yeah.
It doesn't work that way. And I think for so long during my running phase of that 5 to 6 years, 7 years when I was running, I thought that was what I was looking for. What is just the quick way to get out of this? Like, this is so uncomfortable and no one... You know, the classic line is no one prepares you for that. And my answer to that is you prepare you for that. You know, you prepare you for that because you have, the preparation is through acceptance. The preparation is through awareness, right? Like, I'm about to do this thing that's going to be really difficult. And I'm not going to will myself into this discomfort and be like, you know, in this place of self-flagellation, but I'm also going to be aware that it's not going to feel normal for me.
Yeah.
It's not going to feel easy or comfortable or what I'm used to.
No, absolutely. And as you say, not running away from that. And also sometimes you don't want to prevent experiences. You know, experiences, again, you don't wish certain experiences on yourself or someone else, but when they happen, and again, it sounds like such a cliche, but you really do learn through them.
You really, really do. And there's really no way of around it. You know, you think of really any major life transition and no one can prepare you for every detail, but they can provide you and prepare you with the tools. They can't prevent you from going through it. And that's what we do at Rise. You know, that's essentially the whole premise of what we're creating. We have a mentorship platform where youth athletes are mentored by Olympians and soon to be professional athletes, not just Olympians. Mm-hmm. And the whole purpose of that is to instill a sense of confidence and empowerment and focus and resilience in athletes when they're young, so that those skills are more natural and come more natural as they go through their life's journey. And that doesn't mean they're not going to experience something. That means they will fully embrace whatever it is, no matter how hard it is, but hopefully they're equipped with different ways in order to express themselves and handle it in a better way that feels like acceptance and not stop going through this. Stop, you know, don't go through this. Don't go through it. It's not that bad. Get over it. You know, like those things need to be out of our language. And, you know, of course, it's set and setting. If that is something you need to do for a specific thing, then do it. But then continue to revisit what it is that you're experiencing so that you can work through that.
Yeah. And as you said earlier, like you'd wished maybe someone had been there to mentor you or to, that, you know, to tell their story. So, you know, through Rise, it's this great opportunity to mentor young athletes, share stories, not to prevent them going through things, but just prepare them as best we can or best you can. And Caroline, just lastly, you know, I know that you're an artist, and maybe you can just tell us a little bit more. You speak about your creativity and, you know, connecting with that. So, you know, you started drawing again and painting again. So maybe just explain a little bit, how has that helped you to, I love that idea you say about curious about yourself and finding different aspects of your identity. So creativity is a big part of you, and as are your drawings. So yeah, do you want to tell me a little bit more about them and what they mean?
Yeah. So I, you know, as a young girl, I was very into art. I took IB art in high school. In college, I wanted to major in art and photography, but swimming was in the middle of the lab times. So that, you know, kind of took that away, which is all part of this story. When I finished swimming in my last year of transitioning from swimming, I enrolled myself at the Fashion Institute of Design and Merchandising in downtown LA. And I had a goal of designing swimsuits. And I really, really, really wanted to so badly. I did merchandise product development. So it wasn't necessarily like sewing clothes together. It was creating line plans and developing the product, which is pretty hard. It's really a hard major. And during that time, we sketched a lot of women specifically because I was doing women's swimwear. And I loved it. But what I didn't like was how perfect we had to make them and how unrealistic we had to draw the models.
Yeah.
And it's fun. They're fun. They're old cartoon fashion models, but they're not real. And I didn't feel connected to them. So I took some time off, obviously, after FITM. I didn't really do much with it right away. I ended up taking a lot of mental health time there for a while. And then when I came back around to it, it was after my concussion in 2018. After that, I had horrible vertigo and I split my skull open and I was recovering for quite several months of confusion and fog and darkness. And just concussions are really gnarly, by the way. They're some new beast for me. I couldn't have believed how difficult it was to hold a conversation even. It was just really, really scary. So I started to sketch because it was the way that I could use my words, because I couldn't formulate words properly because of my concussion for a long time. And so I sketched and I sketched and I started doing all this again, and I got more and more abstract with it. Created the bodies to look different, and weird shapes and weird lines and smudges and it was just so healing for me. And I started to heal my body through my art, which is interesting because I was drawing bodies. So I was actually putting together the, you know, psychosomatic experience of connecting my mind and my body through art. And it was really cool. I started journaling and drawing. I started just doodling. It was like doodling. I didn't do anything with them. I just played and I would post them to my Instagram and et cetera, et cetera. And then about last year at this time, I started to get people saying, I really want to buy these. Like, would you make them? Like, you know, I want to buy these. And I was like, oh, I don't want to make something a job, you know? And I started selling some and they've done really well. So, you know, I'm keeping it right now as just something that I do for fun and that I create. And if people want them, they want them. And if they don't, they don't. But for the most part, it's been really, really cool to be able to share my art with the world. And, you know, I call them human forms.
Yeah.
So people can decipher and, you know, understand what it is that they're seeing and experiencing by looking at this piece of art, similar to most art. But since my art doesn't have faces and the bodies are very abstract and whatnot, you can kind of create your own story in there. Nothing is realism. But I healed my body through art, through drawing the body, through creating the different ways that the body can be interpreted and different emotions, you know, with each sketch and each drawing that I was experiencing that day.
Yeah.
Would come out on paper, and you know, my interpretation will be different than someone else's of that exact sketch, but it was really a beautiful experience for me.
Yeah, and Caroline, you've, as you say, you've done a huge amount of work on yourself, and as you say, self-development and self-knowledge is a continual process. You sound like you're in a pretty good space now. So what is next, do you think, for yourself, for your career, for your life?
Yeah, I'm still working on myself, actually. I'm still diving into some stuff, but I'm feeling much steadier and far more solid in my truth of who I am as a human being that is not just this cookie cutter athlete that I thought I was. It's taken a decade. but you know, that's totally great. And so right now Rebecca and I are still creating Rise, and we're going to be opening it up to more than just Olympians, which would be wonderful, so that they can mentor athletes from all over the world as well, and use our virtual platform because it's all virtual. And then I'm still making art. So those are my two things as far as what I'm producing right now.
Yeah.
And then as far as what I'm just being is I'm sort of figuring out boundaries in my life and energy expenditure for things that I may have just bent over backwards and did just to make sure someone wasn't mad at me or liked me, or, you know, the whole pleasing thing we talked about. So
yeah.
I'm learning that personally, which has been helpful for an empath like me so that I'm not drained all the time. But that is a game changer for work, for life, and for relationships. It's a big process that actually, you know, is not taken lightly over here.
No, I know.
Yeah.
No, that's awesome. I like
That's about it.
The difference between, say, what you're producing versus what you're being. And often they say quite different things.
Yeah. And I have a goal this year of kind of searching into some more adventure as well as philanthropic excursions. I have always had that bone in my body, and I think the current events as of late especially are empowering for me to tap back into that space where I'm like, I want to make a difference in a different world. Rise is obviously making a huge difference. It's a huge contribution, but you know, whether it's art therapy, art healing, just something that I'm really interested in. So I'm looking into some different nonprofits to be a part of and whatnot. So if anybody has any that, and obviously I'm talking with you about it. So, but you know, I think that there's some excitement around that right now because I'm exploring that, and it takes some time as well, but it's good to have those conversations and start them.
Yeah, no, that sounds very exciting. Thank you for listening to Behind the Dream. If you want to find out more, please visit my Instagram page at Dr. Kirsten van Heerden, or visit our website at www.newtonagency.co.za.